Boise.
HD3 Detroit.
KJAQ.
HD3 Seattle.
WBMX.
HD3 Boston. And on AOL Radio and Yahoo Launchcast. Exploring the unknown and the known.
Para X Radio with Dave Jones and John Zaffis.
248-545-SOUL.
Call Dave and John now.
On CBS Radio's The New Sky.
NewSkyRadio.com.
And welcome everyone to a brand new edition of the Para X Radio Show. This is Dave, and unfortunately, just for the next few minutes, we are minus John Zaffis. John is on a trip back from points unknown and unheard of, naturally, and he is traveling back, and he'll be with us in just a little bit during the show, so we will be looking forward to John joining us. But we are very privileged to have you along with us tonight. We appreciate each and every one that's taken time out of their schedules to join us on the Para X Radio Show here on the Para X Radio Network, as well as CBS Radio, The New Sky Radio, and also Psychic Radio. Now, you can visit that website anytime you like at www.psychiconair.com. We have a terrific discussion that's awaiting us tonight, because this is one lots of us have an interest in. When it comes to ufology, UFOs, aliens, many of us have preconceived notions about what that means. Many of us have grown up through the years watching The Day the Earth Stood Still and all these War of the Worlds and these kind of things. So we developed an idea of what we think aliens are and what they're doing. It goes all the way across the gamut from the benevolent alien figures who are just coming by to check on us to see how we're doing, to see how our progression has been made, maybe just to stop in out of curiosity, abduct a few of us, do a few experiments on us, and just try to find out more about us. And then they go along their merry way. We have on the other end of the spectrum the aliens who are coming to this planet to try to cause us harm. And so we bounce back and forth between those two extremes. Tonight we're going to be talking to two individuals that have put together a thought, put together a theory, if you will, about what is happening to us as a collective in humanity. What's humanity suffering, or how are we being impacted by these visits? Nigel Kerner is an author and freelance journalist. He was born in Sri Lanka. His mother's from a British planting family, and his father an officer in the British Royal Navy Fleet Air Arm. This international family base provided the background for an obsessive and serious interest in international human affairs and how these interface with science, religion, and philosophy. And you can find out all about that tonight. He's felt driven from his younger years to expose the humbug and hypocrisy in modern scientific and religious and social thinking. His formal graduate education is in biomedical science and human behavioral psychology. His fascination with the puzzling and enigmatic phenomenon of UFOs resulted in his first book, The Song of the Greys, which was published by Hodder and Stoughton in 1997. This serious work on the subject is now noted worldwide for its radical view on the phenomenon. His latest book, Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, which are going to be giving away those copies of those volumes tonight, published by Inner Traditions and Bering Company, is the second in a trilogy about the UFO phenomenon and its social repercussions on humanity. His books and numerous articles have established his unique thesis as part of the canon of serious literature on the subject, and you're going to find out about that tonight. We also have joining us tonight John Biggerstaff, Dr. John Biggerstaff. Since an early age, John has been interested in how the body and its cells work. He's obtained an honors degree in medical biochemistry from the University of Surrey in England. He obtained a PhD in cell biology and biochemistry from Brunel University. He's now a research associate professor in Tennessee and holds an adjunct research associate professorship in genome sciences and technology, biochemistry, molecular and cell biology and microbiology, environmental biotechnology, and nutrition. His main research interests include the study of immunity and inflammation and cancer, as well as the analysis of the biocompatibility of materials used in medical devices and implants, in addition to his main career. He's been interested in subjects which currently remain outside the accepted scope of scientific study, such as UFOs and miraculous events attributed to the paranormal and to various religions. This is going to be fun, folks. Welcome, Nigel, and welcome, John, to the show.
Thanks very much, and we're honored to be part of your show.
Good evening to Dave and your listeners.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. We do appreciate you being here. We want to get directly to the subject, and again, folks, want to mention the call-in number at 248-545-7685, 248 545-SOUL. We do welcome your calls. You also get put into the hat for the drawing for one of these four books, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, The Conspiracy to Genetically Tamper with Humanity. And by all means, we are interested in what is happening to us, surreptitiously as it is. I'd like to start with you, Nigel. For those that are not really up on the subject, who are the Greys?
Well, that's even after 40-odd years research, and between 30 and 40 years, give or take 5 or 6 years, the difficulty for me to decide is, in fact, where these things come from. And it's something that has to be, for the moment, up in the air, so to speak, up in space, so to speak. But the fact that they are here, for me, I have no doubt. And the whole business of this alien thing was something that I actually stumbled on quite by accident. Well, I say accident, but it was kind of a sort of design to this. When my second boy asked me the question some years ago, Dad, are UFOs real? Now this young chap was fairly well hitched up mentally, and I had recourse to be put in my place several times by his quick thinking, and I thought that to give him a kind of, you know, gut answer would have been something that I might regret. And so I decided to take a rain check on that and have a look into the thing before I actually told him what I thought. My inclination was to say this is obviously Mickey Mouse stuff, and it really is something he shouldn't be concerning himself with. But I thought I'd have a look at this. And, of course, I began a long journey, and the journey's taken me 37 to, as I say, 40 years, give or take a bit of time there. And I have to say that at the end of all of that, I came to the conclusion, and the conclusions that have actually turned my entire existential base upside down. And it's been a very, very interesting and a compelling trip. So to answer your question, what these things might be. I believe that, you know, we can see now the damage that's, you know, wrecked by technological process that, you know, may in fact render our planet inhospitable to life. And we can see that the kind of, you know, technological progress leads to, you know, the scope for a nuclear catastrophe, for instance, on a world scale that could achieve the same and even faster. So we've got a big, big problem as human beings. Let's say, for instance, that something happened on some other planetary aspect out there in space, similar to this kind of thing, and they sent out an advanced civilization, and they sent out their gophers out into space, and the Greys may well be the equivalent, but a highly sophisticated equivalent, of what we are doing now. We're sending, you know, into the cosmos our own robots and information gathering systems and so on to check it out and so forth. And I think that these things were a form that they made out of this advanced technology, which was were given a huge advantage of artificial intelligence, perhaps some kind of quantum computer type super intelligence, which was put out there in order to append knowledge, in other words, and feed it back to the home planet, whatever, the creators of these mechanisms. That they are mechanisms, that they are actual robots, biological robots, I have no doubt, through extensive research and checks and double checks, as far as it's possible to go with these things, bearing in mind there are, you know, many secret and national interest junctures here from all countries, I have no doubt about it. That they are of a robotic type. They are not a naturally living species. And so I had to look at this from the point of view of something artificial. Now, if they are in fact artificial, we have a big, big problem here, because implicated in that premise is the fact that you have to ally that to what might be natural as its opposite. And then you go on to this huge surmise, which asks the difference, the basic difference, between what is natural and what is artificial. You know, the universe is full of opposites. In fact, it is defined by opposites. You've got a yin, you've got a yang, plus and minus, and all that kind of thing. I've said this all before on previous radio talks, but I'm hoping to kind of, you know, present this to a new interface audience, so to speak. So please bear with me as I do this, because it is an ethos. If you want to understand where the greys are coming on from and where I'm coming from against the greys, if you see what I'm trying to say. So here we are out there. We've got this artificial mechanism on our planet. Now, where they come from, heaven only knows, or hell only knows, shall we say. The point is, it's really irrelevant. The fact is that with all the evidence we seem to have on the earth, and there is so much of it for anyone in this, in the paranormal, what is commonly called the paranormal outlook, there is so much evidence to say that these things are here, and they have been here for many, many thousands of years, perhaps 200,000 years. And if you then surmise what has happened to our species from a primitive hominid called Homo erectus, whatever, in the past, to suddenly develop 200,000 years ago a pelvis that can admit a huge brain. In other words, not only have you got a larger brain suddenly forming, whereas previous hominids were there for 3 million years with nothing ever happening to them, just seemingly devolving down, yes, from prior types, if you see what I'm trying to say.
I do, yes.
Then we suddenly get 200,000 years ago something called modern man occurring, seemingly almost overnight, of course not overnight, but seemingly in terms of time, very quickly indeed. And so to me, that began to look a little bit suspicious, and I did an awful lot of research into all of this, and it seems quite plausible that some kind of genetic engineering occurred at that point. And of course, Professor Biggerstaff will be much more qualified to talk about this, but if you follow back the line through mitochondria, passed through the female of the human species, whatever, you go back to a point in the past, and it's acknowledged by anthropologists and so on, that we all come from a single African female that they call African Eve, maybe about 200,000 years ago. Now, I believe that a extraterrestrial robotic entity was responsible for this, and this is an interesting moment when we then speculate why would such a thing occur, why are they here so long, and what are they doing with our species? Is it in their interests or is it ours? And that then extrapolation comes, you know, through the book. And in fact, I've written a trilogy of books, the last one of which will be published, so we hope, shortly. Now, Professor Biggerstaff might be able to take you on that mitochondrial thing and say something about that. It would be quite interesting to hear from him, I think, on that particular base.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we'll have to wait to break and do that, but we will want to bring Dr. Biggerstaff on to talk about this, is about the mitochondrial link to this, plus you know, what the effect is on the human body to have these types of genetic changes. So we'll be looking forward to that answer in just a little bit. We'll be right back after break. This is the Para-X Radio Show on Psychic Radio, powered by CBS.
This is Para-X Radio.
On CBS Radio's The New Sky.
New horizons, no boundaries.
Call Dave and John now.
248-545-SOUL.
NewSkyRadio.com.
And welcome back to the Para-X Radio Show on CBS Radio and the wonderful, marvelous Para-X Radio Network. This is Dave. Of course, John will be joining us a little bit later on. John is coming back from a trip, and as soon as he gets home and gets settled, he's going to be in with the show on us with us in just a moment. So please bear with us. So I want to mention this. We have a terrific opportunity for four folks out there tonight. We're going to be giving away four copies of Nigel's book, Nigel Kerner, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. We're going to be giving away those tonight to four lucky listeners. The way you can get into the drawing for that is simple. You can call us at 248-545-7685, 248-545-SOUL. If you want to get a copy of the book, just please call in. You can say hi to us, ask a question of these two gentlemen. That puts you in the drawing. Also, you can go to www.psychiconair.com. Once you go there, you can put your question in the form of an email, basically, and it gets to us directly. You also get put into the drawing for the books as well. So we hope to give away these very interesting volumes. Of course, we do have with us Nigel Kerner. Also, Dr. John Biggerstaff is with us, and we want to direct this to Dr. Biggerstaff if we can. As we left to go to break, Nigel was talking about the link with mitochondrial DNA and the way that the grays are affecting our humanity, basically, our bodies. And if you could, Doctor, if you can expound on that a bit and bring us up to speed on what the link is between the biological aspect of this along with the agenda for the grays.
Yes. Well, as Nigel was saying, what we have to do in order to explain how the greys, et cetera, are doing things to us, and we need to really understand why they're doing it. And to that end, we really need to backtrack a little before we actually get to the genetics and the biochemistry of it to really define in really original cosmological terms what it is that actually makes us up, what it is that makes these greys up, and why they may be so interested in us to try and piggyback on us in the first place, why they've actually come here to do these experiments.
Such an advance, if I may just interpose at that point. Why would they be so interested in a relatively primitive technology such as ours if they can get past the speed of light and get here? Now, our scientists only dream of this possibility. They talk about warping space and wormholes and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, a vast technological thing. Yet these things seem to be able to conquer gravity, whatever, and do the most amazing things in our skies or whatever, such that, you know, your own astronauts testify to the fact that they are here. I understand Gordon Cooper and Ed Mitchell have gone on record saying that this is true. Never mind the 9,000 pilot reports and all the rest of it that actually verify that something very, very strange is happening in our neck of the woods. But let me just take this back a little bit, if I may, Dave, and establish what these the greys may, a little bit more about the greys, establish what this might actually be. Sure. If an alien species with an advanced enough technology to conquer the speed of light in order to reach us has an interest in us with our relatively primitive levels of technology, as I've said, you have to ask the question, obviously, why? Why are they so fascinated with us? What can we, as living beings, give them that technology cannot, you see? What can we do that the best, most advanced robotic artificial intelligence cannot do? It is so much easier, faster, you know, and more predictable to work with an artificial intelligence and a natural intelligence. So why would they bother with us? Now, our bodies are less resilient than robots. The reason why I think these are robots is coming at such vast speeds and having to decelerate into a planetary aspect, whatever it is, requires massive, pulling massive Gs. Now, if you and I, as soft tissue living beings, tried to do that, we'd be a stain on the window panes of a spaceship. But these things have to withstand these massive forces of G. And so their design, from all reports, from Russian reports of these things that have been actually taken out from ships, and there are some indications from America too, that they are a kind of a mercury mulch intertwined with a kind of skeletal aspect of gold wires or whatever, and that they therefore can be compressed or distorted or whatever and take massive forces, you know, on their kind of presentable aspect, whatever that might be. And so, to start with, I believe that there cannot be a biologically set up soft tissue type of entity. It has to be some mechanism, as I said before. Now, if we want our planetary resources, if they sort of come here for gold, shall we say, it would be easy for them to harvest it by purely technological means. They don't need to come and kidnap us and take thousands of us to planets out there to mine gold. They would have the technological means, if they can come here through space-time, to do that no problem at all, just the collecting of stuff and so forth. So there must be something else here that might be on the agenda. And it seems to me that if they want something else, of course, we've got to look at what this might be. So let's say they want our DNA. And that is also easily replicated endlessly from a small sample, as our own biologists already have done through research that they've shown. So it may not be just DNA. It may be something quite different that living natural being has to it. Now, the really crucial thing is that we came in with the universe. We come down in a descendant line of ancestors. So you and I, and everyone that is alive in our world, even any animal species or any type of species, living species, has a derivational line down. And this line came in with the Big Bang. So it is a natural, incidental process that comes through, a process of replication of birth. You see what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
Now, these things are machines, remember. They are subject to the second law of thermodynamics, which says that things get more chaotic and random and dispersed with time, broken up with time. Everything rots. Everything goes one way. Everything in the universe of force will be dismantled. Even the smallest particles will be undone, and we'll end up, as cosmology now accepts this day, in contemporary moments, to say to us, listen, it's all going to end sometime in the far future. So why do we have meaning? Why do we have feeling? Why do we know and sense and can work out things about grays or not? Why do we have intelligence? Why do we have reason? If it's all going to be ended once this happens. There must be something here to do with being there. Being there indefinitely. And I believe if there's a universe like ours that ends and is finite, just as a yin has a yang, there has to be, by implication, a universe that's completely opposite to this, where all things come together into one, into a sense of union. I like to call that, for want of a better word, the Godverse. I don't want to get involved in this anthropocentric God business and so on, because I think that is a it's an absolutely silly thing to do. We've already got so many planets in our own galaxy that science has recently discovered that might be Earth-like. There's bound to be thousands, maybe millions of different species, maybe even like human beings out there. To think that we on this planet are the only ones that qualify for an old man with a white flowing beard touching Adam's finger on the Sistine Chapel would be absolutely ludicrous. So we've got to do away with this old way of thinking about this God principle. And to me, a principle like that could well be a secular principle. Nevertheless, it's an existent one, something that is there, a center, a singularity of pure and utter resolution in total harmony, because we have, by implication, this universe, which is the complete opposite of that. So you see, it's not a question of proof, it's a question of proof by implication. It's not verifiable empirical proof. So we, I believe, came in with the universe, and this derivational line coming down, passed through the thing we now look at as DNA, maybe there were other methodologies that this was passed in the past, that then sets us to be something extraordinary. And to me, the only thing that explains that is that line of information that each of us holds. And I simply refer to this line as soul. It's just a line of derivation. And that's what I mean by the soul. And I believe that these machines can see this natural species of ours, can do this particular trick of being born again, has this line, has this information that stretches all the way back. They have a program in their computer, kind of, you know, quantum-mindedness, so to speak. And they, I believe, want to be part of this incredible facility. And that's what they're doing here. They're trying to amalgamate their own aspect of mindedness, it is, that comes through this derivation and gives us a natural biological mind, so to speak. Now, I'm sorry to go on this long way, but I had to establish that before Dr. Biggerstaff took over.
Sure. Now, one thing we need to do, we only got about a minute or so, we have to go to break. I just want to mention that John Zavis is with us. John, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. John has been coming back from points unknown and joins us.
Hi, John.
We're thrilled, John.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. I thought London was the only place that had traffic jams, John.
Oh,
I wish so, my friend.
Unfortunately not, but that's the thing with live radio is that you go with what you got. And we're just glad to have John back with us, of course. And, of course, the legendary John Zappas will be joining us right after the break. When we come back, what we want to talk about, we do want to get to your questions. We have several questions from our listeners we're going to be talking about. And the subject tonight is gray aliens and the harvesting of souls and how humanity is being genetically changed. Surreptitiously as it is, so that we are not aware of what's going on and the implications thereof, and also what we can do about it. We'll be talking about that when we come back. Of course, with us is Nigel Kerner, Dr. John Biggerstaff, and, of course, the legendary John Zappas. This is the Para-X Radio Show on Psychic Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Para X Radio with Dave Jones and John Zaffis.
On CBS Radio's The New Sky.
248-545-SOUL.
NewSkyRadio.com.
And welcome back to the Para X Radio Show on CBS Radio and Para X Radio Network. And, of course, John Zappas is with us, and we're glad to have John with us. John, I was getting by with one hand tied behind me and not doing so well, so now I'm glad to have my better half with me here. So, John, thanks for being here.
Well, it's always a pleasure, but I had to go out and get a haunted piece of furniture.
So if you happen to see a van pull up in front of your house and John Zappas jumps out, tell him no thanks.
But, you know, it's intriguing, you know, our whole topic this evening and having the guest on and everything. Going from the scientific approach, John, what have you discovered? What have you actually linked, you know, from a medical perspective with some of these things that are basically infiltrating, if you will, or taking over? You know, I'm just so curious, and I know our audience is too.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we start with Nigel's premise, really from his book, that we effectively come in as a thought process together with the atoms into a universe that actually defines our being, then we have an origin back at a singularity, basically, which really means that what he's defining as our souls, which appear individual from the physical viewpoint, are really functions of this zeroness or this God-verse, as he puts it. On the other hand, these aliens are perhaps being made, as he said, on these other planets, but they're effectively artificial devices which are being made of the atomic process itself, and therefore not have no true derivational background back to the beginning. Now, as the universe, shall we say, progresses, we get because of the tendency of the essentially the initial outrush, which is really defined by entropy, taking the universe from really a singularity of complete order, really to a secondary apparent singularity of its opposite, which is essentially complete chaos. And we have the universe essentially within this. Now, this soul is actually part of that function. And so what happens is in a natural devolutionary way, we have more and more restriction in our view till we eventually get to the point where we can have no view anymore. However, one implication of this is that because we can actually observe such an effect, we can actually choose which direction we're actually going to go in. So in other words, because we are a function of the singularity or part of that singularity itself, although apparently viewed differently from the physical universe, we can actually choose either to return to it or to continue within the line of entropy, if you like, gradually increasing our tension or our restriction so that eventually we're no longer able to view that. Now, on the other hand, we have these made things where, and in fact, we are doing this in our own society at the moment. We're going headlong into trying to produce artificial intelligence with the view that we can actually make intelligent beings like ourselves that can go running around and feel and do all of the things we do. But really from the premise of if one takes the premise of the universe and the singularity, this is in fact absolutely impossible to do. And so these things don't have it, have consciousness in the way that we perceive it in terms of being able to appreciate anything. And one could actually they're actually programmed. That all these things will do is follow a computer program in the same way that we're generating computer programs to actually do that. And so, really, like a camera effectively takes a view of things, or this microphone is recording my voice, the equipment that's recording it is not conscious of actually doing that. You are, because you're another being with this original derivation. But the machines themselves are quite incapable of really appreciating anything that we do. So following this program, really, one of the things is that they've discovered is that these beings are now subject to the entropic process itself. They're breaking down and decaying, and so their bio robotic structure is actually decaying on them. And what they've been doing is in traveling through the universe, they come across species like ours. And in coming across species like ours, they realize that through a process again, which Nigel goes into in the book, through the process of reincarnation, etc., we can actually come in and we can actually, to some extent, resist this process which is tending to take us towards the end of the universe. And this represents really what they took out as their prime beings that created them in the first place. But they realize that they've actually lost something through this, and what they're trying to do is to regain it. And so they come across a planet like us where perhaps, we've gotten through this natural devolutionary process, we're getting less and less viewpoint, less and less symmetry, but still sufficient to have a derivational point back to zero. And what they found, what they may have found is that they can actually piggyback on this. And from this, for instance, African Eve, etc., a very small population, they've taken an experimental population of beings and genetically affected them, really, so that we become more suitable to their bio-roboid genetic profile, if you like, while still retaining this quality that we have. And really, this is probably the most important thing that they want. And so they need a mechanism for actually doing that. And of course, we're genetic, and they need the ability to get in there. Now, in terms of our actual processing, obviously, one can say that our people previous to us, our predecessors, were not the apes. In fact, they were more advanced, more symmetrically oriented beings, which had part of matter and part of the spiritual thing, but they were able to more freely move between those, and gradually we've become more and more locked down into that. And what this has resulted in is there's essentially a lack of symmetry, and really whether mitochondria may have been little organisms which came in, and in fact we can't find those organisms when we look at the archaea, etc. We can't actually find any of these organisms still out there. But these grey aliens, what they can do is that the mitochondria, which are the little powerhouses of the cell, the greys can actually get into those using things like ultraviolet light. And in fact, we actually do this with light and with high power infrared lasers, etc. We can actually break up this little bit of circular DNA within the mitochondria. And we know that when we do that, there are parts of this mitochondrial DNA called mitochondrial elements, which can get into the nucleus and actually change the three-dimensional structure of the DNA in a nucleus. And we know now from our more recent studies that it's not just the genetic code which is responsible for what we are. You know, there are genes which are, for instance, but they think that there's a gene responsible for things like alcoholism and violence and happiness and intelligence and all of this. But as we go into this, we find that, in fact, that's not the whole story at all. You know, they were talking about trying to find genes for disease and things like this. And in fact, recent articles in the last few months have showed that there is really only about a 10% correlation with the actual genetic code itself and, you know, the disease process. And so a lot more of research is going to be done, but it's quite clear that it's the three-dimensional shape of that DNA which is actually responsible for the sort of psychological profiles, if you like, that we then, through our brain, interpret as really us. Now, if you actually then go and intercept that with other bits of DNA, you're going to change that profile. And if you know, and these guys are probably thousands of years ahead of, or even millions of years ahead of us in terms of this type of technology, it's quite clear that if they can then use things like light and inserted sequences, for instance, into mitochondria, that they can actually get those sequences to be absorbed by the nucleus of the cell, which is where our master DNA is, and actually get us to behave in the way they want. And it may in fact be this which is driving us to study technology more and more and more until we eventually produce our own artificial intelligence or even lose our ability to recognize and understand what our own singularity is. And under such circumstances, we've effectively lost the game and we're trapped within such a situation. So potentially, the end product of the interaction of the greys with human beings is, in fact, a very, very dangerous situation.
Indeed. We got about 30 seconds before we have to go to break, and we do have your questions coming in. As a matter of fact, we have a caller we'll get to right after break here in just a moment. And again, if you do have a question, you can private chat me in live chat at www.para-x.com. You can also call us at 248-545-7685. It's 248-545-SOUL, or you can use the instant feedback form at psychiconair.com. Any of those get you in the drawing tonight for one of these four volumes about gray aliens and the harvesting of souls by Nigel Kerner. We'll be right back after this, and we'll be getting to your questions. This is the Para X Radio Show on CBS Radio. Back in just a moment. And welcome back to the Para X Radio Show on CBS Radio and Para X Radio Network. And, of course, we have with us Nigel Kerner tonight, as well as Dr. John Biggerstaff, answering your questions about the gray aliens and why they are trying to harvest our souls. And we'll be getting your questions, as a matter of fact, right away. John, we have a caller already.
Excellent.
Brian, you're with us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. This is Dragon. I've got a question. I've got a show that's on Para-X called Behind the Truth, and I do a lot of what you guys are talking about. My question is, if you are familiar with the recent attack on an alien spacecraft by the Canadian and the United States Air Force, in which one was shot down?
I read something about that, yes.
I know it was broadcast very briefly and then shut down really quickly. The director of MUFON actually says he went to the site, and when he was there, they were apparently cutting something apart on the side of the mountain where this thing crashed. And there were reports from other people that went to him in regards to ambulances taking out little tiny people, as they called them.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, you know, this is not an exception at all. It's happened all over the world. And, of course, the incredible thing is there seems to be some kind of covert operation or some kind of team wherever these things happen that actually obscure all the evidence. Because I don't believe that these gray entities themselves are actually doing this. I think they have a base of hybrid human beings, that they've actually succeeded in getting into some format with them, and that this particular team, it's an incredible thing, I know. It would imply that even governments have been infiltrated at the very center, at the very highest level. And I think the evidence is overwhelming that whenever such things happen, you're quite right, they suddenly wipe. It's rather like, you know, people who go in and clean your house for a payment or whatever, and these things go in there and take away all signs of this alien intrusion, if you like. And that's why it is so difficult to actually get physical evidence, the smoking gun, so to speak, so that we can put that before the world. If indeed we did get it, it would be even more difficult, because if the media are controlled at the very highest level from by governments or whatever, you'd have to get it past editors and all that kind of thing, stick it on that program and come and say, now, look, folks, here they are. And obviously these things don't want us to know they are here, and that's one of the reasons I suspect they could be a really very bad and malevolent effect on all humankind.
Yeah, I have myself tried to get in touch with some of the reporters that have reported things on the news rather quickly, and within the first few minutes, it's completely yanked off the air and nothing else is said about it. But every one of them I have spoken to refuse to give me any type of information. They will actually tell me that was not me on there. I did not do that.
Isn't it awfully frustrating? And good people like you and True trying to find some kind of evidence to show the world that this thing is here. They're so frustrated by so much that has happened in the way of trying to contrive some kind of, you know, obfuscation of the evidence and so on, that it's almost, many people give up, in fact, to try to do this. And many people are threatened, of course, with agencies and people coming in and reporting to them that they will lose their jobs or whatever. And so people don't want to go out into the mainstream, so to speak, and declare this. But in fact, the frequency of it is so much now that even governments are opening their doors to this. Some national governments are opening their doors. It won't be long before maybe this admission would be made that we are really in the midst of something absolutely devastating, I believe, to the human species.
Yes, well, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
As a matter of fact, it dates back to ancient Egyptian times.
And even longer than that, you know. There are petroglyphs, you know.
Beginning to find evidence in some of the ancient Egyptian tombs of alien-type artifacts and other such things.
Do you know there are petroglyphs in Australia that are 40,000 years old, depicting very clear impressions of these discs and these what look very much like astronauts within them. That's 40,000 years, way older than the Egyptian civilization.
Right. I mean, even the Mayans are showing evidence of it from back then, too.
Thank you very much for your very interesting question, but I do understand and sympathize with what you're saying.
Thanks for calling, Brian. I appreciate it. Great question. You're in for the drawing tonight for one of the books. I appreciate it.
Okay, we got a question from Henry. He would like to know if there's any physical evidence about all this.
There is plenty of physical evidence, but I'll tell you what, the controlling agencies will not let you see it. In fact, if you look into this subject for as long as I have done, no one, with the slightest objective mind, would be left in any doubt that this is an absolutely real phenomenon. But you try getting that out there to prove that this is so, and that's when the whole world comes on your head from all kinds of directions. Physical evidence in the genome plus junk DNA, you know, is really something that we have to look at in terms of trying to show that there have been changes made that are outside our own technical capabilities in the past. And I think this is where John Bickerstaff may be.
It's clear from that, as I was alluding to before, that these changes in your DNA profile are going to be mapped in terms of a probable psychological effect. And you know they've been doing a lot of research in genetics and psychiatry, etc., and showing that there is clear evidence between a connection between our genetics and our psychological makeup. And of course, as I was saying, it is clear that the mitochondrial functions, and as well as the three-dimensional shape of the DNA itself, which can be manipulated by electric and magnetic potentials, can severely influence this.
Yeah, and also, too, John, if I may, this is from Christina, asked this very interesting question. And we only got about a couple of minutes. I have to apologize. We'll be going to break. But she asked, do they use cell phagocytosis to destroy our cells in order to take control of us?
Well, phagocytosis is the process by which white cells can actually destroy bacteria, for instance, and mop up debris in the cell. I think what she possibly meant was apoptosis, which is in fact related to the function of the mitochondria themselves. Apoptosis is in fact a normal part of cell turnover, but it's where it becomes aberrant. It's been implicated in various diseases and cancer. And absolutely, if you start messing with the mitochondria, you can get a whole series of related diseases, etc., from that.
Wonderful answer. Wonderful, Chris.
Well, disease and anything like that obviously has an attendant effect on psychology or whatever. And the link-up between these actual empirical mechanisms and the psychological output at the other end through thinkability, whatever, is a well-known factorization in medical and medical practice and so forth. And so they see this, of course, as only the conventional, you know, out there sense of it all, the mainstream, which would say that just happens within the body, and so therefore you manifest psychological indications. But if you look further and you look deeper, you begin to see a correlation that is outside the actual body form making these things happen. There is something extraneous using magnetic fields or whatever that might do this. Some years ago, a man took a little matchbox and on television demonstrated by turning some kind, it was a magnetometer, and turning this particular device, he could make an entire restaurant speak softer. And he demonstrated this to the cameras to see. Now, that sent a chill through me. I mean, I remember this, it was about 30 years ago, in a program on television called The Pandora's Box. And it was, if that is possible, we've got a problem, all of us.
Yes, indeed. And we got about 30 seconds. We've got to go to break, folks. But I want to remind you, please call in at 248-545-SOUL. That's 248-545-SOUL. If you'd like to be put into the drawing for one of these four amazing books that we have, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, you get put into that. Also, if you use the instant feedback form at www.psychiconair.com, you instantly get put into the drawing for this. All you have to do is just fill it out and say, I want in on the drawing. That's all you need to do. We'll be right back after this. There is a component, folks. There is a component with the discussion tonight that draws in ghosts and apparitions and grays. We'll be talking about that when we come right back. This is the Para-X Radio Show on CBS Radio. Back in a moment.
WOMC. HD3 Detroit.
KJAQ.
HD3 Seattle.
WBMX.
HD3 Boston. And on AOL Radio and Yahoo LaunchCast.
Para-X Radio with Dave Jones and John Zaffis.
248-545-SOUL.
Call Dave and John now.
On CBS Radio's The New Sky. NewSkyRadio.com.
And welcome back to the Para-X Radio Show on CBS Radio and the Para-X Radio Network. We do want you to please tune in at www.para-x.com. Not only do you get this show, but you get many, many other live shows that cover the whole gamut of the paranormal at www.para-x.com. Do yourself a favor and visit there. Also, you can tonight, if you're listening by other means and you'd like to come to para-x.com, we do have a live chat room that you can come into with your questions, comments, intermingle with some of the folks in there because they're fun to be around, and you get a chance to do that free and postage paid by just coming into para-x.com. I have John Zaffis with us, of course. John has a terrific question from one of our listeners. John.
Oh, yeah, we're getting so much fantastic questions coming in. This is Joe from Visions Magazine, otherwise known as our supervisor. What he would like to know, based on the research and reports of alien species traveling these distances via gravity, is it possible that it's a wormhole theory?
Well, that's a very difficult thing for me to answer. I really do not know where the wormholes are. It's a possible way of traveling, but there are many other mechanisms that may be used by an advanced technology to actually negate the effects of gravity. And you know, if you can do this, I mean, some of these disks that have been found, and China has, on the latest reckoning by my researchers, something like 17 of them. The United States has a certain number that I'm not allowed to disclose because my source would be in compromised, but they certainly have these craft. And there are things that are what they call gravity amplifiers that negate the effect of gravity. And if you can do that, then speed is limitless. You're not restricted to the Einstein thing of 186,000 miles per second. And so I think that these mechanisms that they have are much more sophisticated than having to create a massive, great wormhole so that we can move from one end of the universe to the other. The problem with wormholes is it's very difficult to target where you want to go to create the wormhole. They think that it's, at least in our science terms, maybe these people can do this. I don't want to describe them as people because they really are machines. And this kind of intelligence that is here pervading our planet may well have far more simple but very, very sophisticated means of going at limitless speeds to get wherever they want and get to their targets specifically.
John, this is for John Bickerstaff.
Not dodging the question. I really do. I really have to tell you, I don't really know. I'm not really aware of any wormholes being made in any kind of vicinity to our planet at the moment. If that's in fact the question you asked, I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear it, but I thought that's the question you asked.
Yes, indeed, you did. And this is for John Bickerstaff, and this is a good question from Patsy. In Ohio, and she asks, have there been any DNA studies done on those who have claimed to be abductees or those that have been contacted, the third kind contactees, that show any type of changes to their DNA structure? Are you aware of any kind of studies or are you a part of any studies that might indicate that there has been some type of a DNA tampering?
Well, Nancy, that's a really fascinating question. The real simple answer is that I'm not aware of any published studies to do with this type of analysis. And really the problem with all of this is that, you know, although we are very interested in these aliens and UFOs, etc., in terms of general biological science, it tends to be a little more skeptical of such things, and so people are not really willing to actually go out there and do a study. I think it would be one of the most fascinating things to actually do that, and I suspect that if what we're postulating is actually true, we may gain some evidence to actually support such a thing. And, you know, I mean, I would love to do such a study, or maybe it would be possible for organizations interested in the Greys, et cetera, to be able to actually see if they could get a bunch of people to actually agree to having such tests done on them to do that.
They have this phenomenon of junk DNA. We've got something like 95-97%, depends where you read it, but a huge number of junk DNA that actually doesn't code for protein, that is just there, that's present in us. Nobody knows why it's there. And so one has to understand that obviously there must be a reason why all this junk DNA is there. They try to make all kinds of plausible reasons for it, but nothing really stands up to close examination. Yet this stuff is there in all of us, and that's where I think that we are, you know, at liberty to try and explain as rationally as we can, of course, not some, you know, pie in the sky obscure guesses at this, but to look at this with a reasoned biological insight into it, that something like, you know, for instance, it's like carrying around two trunks, an elephant carrying around two trunks, just in case one's going to be useful in the future. And we know that, you know, the beauty of the way that we are, you know, in terms of our design, is that we are totally ergonomic and totally economic in the design of biology. We don't have extras, if you see what I mean. So why do we have junk DNA in there?
But the problem is that to do such a study, our problem is that we've got over 3,000 million base pairs per, you know, of DNA per cell. And yes, we do know the complete genome sequence of certain individuals, but by no means as many as we could to actually perform such a study. And really bear in mind that we don't know what sequences are being specifically used or targeted, or what shapes of DNA. You know, we've got the basic genetic code, but like a rope, we can actually twist this thing up, and that really profoundly affects its function. We don't actually know specifically what we're looking for, so we would have to take, for instance, a group of people, abductees, etc., and look for specific differences to people that clearly haven't been abducted, and how do we determine that? It's actually quite a difficult study to perform to actually tell you exactly what's going on, although I think the principle is extent that it's quite possible to do that.
Yeah, but the problem is, you see, we have to have the funding to do this. And the problem there is that the funding is only decided upon criterions that the financing organizations dictate. And so we have a big problem here. If there were independent scientists who could pick their subject and say, look, we're going to go for this, and really we're going to nail this particular one about, aliens and DNA and all the rest of it, that would be fine. But the world of funding and in science doesn't work that way. If there is some generous multi-billionaire who wants to kind of, you know, pass on the finance to it, I'm sure John Biggerstaff and his independent laboratory will be able to oblige.
I'll be more than happy to apply for funding if somebody can persuade the NIH to actually come out with a program to do that.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. We got a question that came in from Bonnie in California. She would like to know, if the Greys are robots, why were they not discovered at such a location like Roswell?
Well, they were. But you don't hear about it. And so, you know, the people who delve into this and get, some years ago, a colonel in the United States Air Force told his son that he was on a very, very big secret mission that will blow the heads off the world. This son met me some years later in London, and his dad by that time had become a general, and on his deathbed. And on his deathbed, he told his son, before he died, that he was actually instrumental as a colonel of taking one of these creatures outside one of the crashed saucers at Roswell. Now, he was threatened all his life, obviously, by the secret disposition of it all, and he could only make this statement to his son when he died for that reason, and the son can relate this information to me. Now, I don't think it is likely that this man would die, who was dying, would lie. And there are many, many thousands of people who are under the same premise that are not liars. They simply are not liars. And for governments to make them seem to be that and all the rest of it, I think is a very, very bad thing indeed. And we know how governments lie, don't we?
Oh, we would never suspect that at all, no. But one thing I do want to ask, if I could, very quickly, because we have several questions coming in, I do want to get to the component. Rachel, let's go ahead and visit this here. We only got a couple of minutes, and I apologize, gentlemen, for this. We've got to go to break. But I did want to bring in the aspect of the Shroud of Turin. I know that's difficult to do in a minute and a half or so, but how does the Shroud of Turin enter?
Well, it seems a very unlikely thing, doesn't it? But I tell you what, if there is an exposition of truth that actually verifies a lot of what we say, it happened in a little sepulchre in Judea 2,000 years ago. I was recently at at a meeting with all the top scientists actually researching the Shroud in contemporary moments, you know, in Frascati in Italy. And a colleague of mine, Dr. Andrew Silverman, delivered a dissertation based on something I'd written about the Shroud in Song of the Greys, my first book on the subject. And the whole revelation process there was an absolute sensation. Now, I don't know the background. I don't know whether we have time to give you the background of the Shroud. It would take much longer than a minute and a half. But let me tell you, we now think, and this is verification through science, actual hard empirical science, that there is a mark on a piece of cloth 14 foot long, of the body, of the back and the front of a dead body that actually bears all the references that describe the crucifixion of a man called Joshua ben Yosef, or Jesus Christ to Christians, and that this particular cloth is a astounding science. Now, there was some kind of, you know, controversy about the date of this thing. Let me tell you, that now has been reconciled. And if you really want to get some idea about the latest situation, please read all as much as you can, because in a brief moment of time, that is almost unimaginable, a light brighter than the sun lit up whatever was under this cloth, and a dead body stood up vertically and stained the cloth with a radiant energy, which tells me, and let me tell you, I'm a rather skeptical Christian, you know, about all these things, affirmed for me beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is something about humanity, because, you know, this man came to save us and told us we were like him and we would do the things that he would do, that each and every one of us is so special that we have the capacity to do exactly this, each of us. And that's the triumphant story I want to say on your show tonight, is that if you can read about this, and I don't know how much time I have left to actually talk about this, but that is where you get a connection with the Greys. Now, I don't, obviously, to develop this connection would take a little bit of time, but I must make the statement. Read as much as you can about this piece of cloth, the Shroud of Turin, and I think your readers will not be disappointed, because they'll discover something absolutely wonderful about this.
www.shroud.com.
Yes, www.shroud.com, is that correct? I think that's webpage. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's an absolutely marvelous thing, and it belongs to all mankind, regardless of religion or tribe. It is a triumph for humanity itself, what this individual managed to prove and do 2,000 years ago.
Amazing. We got to go to break, and I want to mention this again, folks. If you'd like to read out more on this, so you get a chance to win the book tonight, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, all you got to do is call in at 248-545-7685, or you can go to psychiconair.com, fill out the instant feedback form. You automatically get put in for the drawing. We have four of these to give away tonight. You can read up a lot on it and find out more about it. When we come back, we're going to talk about spirits and talk about the relationship with UFOs. This is the Para X Radio Show on CBS Radio and Para X Radio Network.
Para X Radio with Dave Jones and John Zaffis.
248-545-SOUL.
Call Dave and John now.
On CBS Radio's The New Sky.
NewSkyRadio.com.
And welcome back to the Para X Radio Show on CBS Radio and Para X Radio Network. We are here, of course, with Nigel Kerner and Dr. John Biggerstaff talking about gray aliens and the harvesting of souls. And we have had some terrific discussions already, and certainly 90 minutes is not enough to cover the entire gamut of the book. But what I do want to do is mention it to you. Again, the name of the book is Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. This is through Bear & Company Publishers. You can go there to www.bearandcompanybooks.com, and you can get a copy there. But you get a chance tonight to win one of these volumes. We have four to give away. Again, if you call it 248-545-7685, anytime during the show, we're going to give these away tonight. Or if you want to go to the instant feedback form, which is much faster, and you get more folks involved at www.psychiconair.com, just go fill out the instant feedback form. You automatically get put into the drawing for this book. But I would ask that anyone who gets an opportunity to get a copy of this book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. Now, this one has much more to do with John Zaffis, actually both of us. But I do want to bring this component in before we have to go tonight with these gentlemen. One of the statements that you made in the book was about the fact that ghosts are something different than what we may think that they are. Of course, they're departed individuals and disembodied spirits and those kind of things. But that there's something that's written in the book that is given as some type of a description of why that they're out there, why they're stuck, if you will. And that would be that because of the karmic debt that all of us own from the way we behave in this life and the way that we conduct ourselves, that we do pick up a karmic debt, and that somehow the grays are messing with our structure, messing with our DNA, our humanity, our souls, as it were, to where these apparitions don't have the chance to fulfill their karmic debt. Maybe you, if you can, I know it's a very big subject to discuss in a very short period of time, but can you flesh that out a little bit for us?
Yeah, well, it's based on a fundamental premise that I try to establish, and that is that this business of thinking can either bring things together. Just the idea of thinking can bring things together if it's a thought that unites, and the things that and the opposite is the thought that divides. You can call that hate, and you can call the thoughts that bring together love, if you like. So I'm trying to simplify this. As it's obviously not as simple as that, but that would do as a final premise on all of this. Now, if you look at what we are, I think that in bodies we look, we've got arms and legs and physical forms and all of that in a physical universe. But what we are essentially is what we know. And what we know is the way that we can do these two momentums, carry these momentums out. And I think that when we finish our physical, you know, tenure in a gravitational field and a force field of this particular planet, shall we say, we are supposed to die. We end, you know, our atoms come to an end with age and so on, or whatever, through disease, whatever. And then what continues is what I term an electrospatial field of knowledge. It's an information field that is not made of atoms. It's in fact, if there are atoms, if there is force, there's also the opposite, where there is no force as well. And this is a kind of a mechanism of no force that extrapolates ideas and all kinds of knowledge and understanding. That carries on and marks every single individual as to having all the knowledge of the universe, or parts of it, or part of it. This carries on and therefore lingers, I believe, in the space between atoms. So death is within the universe, but out of the universe at the same time, in a situation where there is less enforcedness. The atom is the fields of actual force. The space between atoms going towards its actual central point goes into degrees of less force. And I think that if we unite things, we go right to the center and escape out of force altogether into what I call the Godverse. And if we do the opposite, we get stuck within shells that go outward from that central point. And then we, depending on not understanding all there is to understand in terms of knowledge, we get brought back into situations where force pushes us into a physical form, and that is, you know, the way we get born through a zygote forming inside a woman and all that, and then that whole process carries through. And so the point about all of this is that we then have a situation of where do we linger in between? And I think that there are shells. Look at it as a kind of a target. I use that to kind of, you know, give you an idea of what this might be like in the book. And if you look at that, if you look at you kind of, you know, the gold, if you like, in the target is right. You're in there, in the Godverse. You don't come back. You don't reincarnate. You are in a unionized state forever, knowing all things. And you're one. There's no space. There's no time. You know everything there is to know. You are, in fact, what I call in Godhead, if you like. But outside that, as you go to the outer rings, you get more and more states of restriction. And that's all it is. Sin is not something dirty. It's something you don't know. And so you simply have to just know, just change your mind, learn, and you'll move towards the center. If you don't, you will stay on the verges, and the verges bring you back. And these shells are, in fact, an extrapolation of what you don't know. So you get stuck with what you don't know, and karma is simply how you unravel what you don't know, if you see what I'm trying to say. Now, I think the Grace technology can reach the outer shells, and there they can actually affect what these morphogenic electrospatial fields are. And this is what they use in order to actually ident with their own types of minders as their program. And the way they come in and make hybrids is that they alter that knowledge, which then comes into a physical premise inside the zygote, that's the cell that's formed from the two, the male gamete and the female gamete meeting inside a fallopian tube or whatever, and then create the human being. And I believe that they have to reach into the space between atoms, but that reach is also a product of their technology. They themselves cannot, you know, by definition, be in that space. This is because they are purely atomic constructs. They are atoms and nothing else. So they then actually put themselves and their kind of aspect in there. And that's why I think that great mystics and mediums or whatever can actually see them amongst souls, that they actually identify greys there, you know, because this is where they're actually fiddling with individual souls and identing these souls with their own information so that it comes back into physical life. So it's a lot more than this, and I had to write three books to try to explain the whole thing. And, you know, you'd have to refer to the books to get more details on this.
But you can see from this that if they're actually affecting the process by which we naturally do that, and they don't understand where that principle is actually coming from or the extent to which we have to adjust our fields, if you like, to return to that central point, then really they're messing about and they're interrupting our ability to do it ourselves, and we've got a really big problem with that.
Yeah, and because if they do that, you see, David, the problem is that they then interrupt that natural system that allows us an eternal tenure. And, you know, the great Christian teacher, for instance, came and promised us one thing. He said, "Believe in me, and I will give you eternal life." What does eternal life mean? It just means existence indefinitely. And I think if a machine psychology, not understanding what they're doing, actually just wants our own souls, if you like, just as an information-carrying mechanism, so that they can actually kind of alter their state, then they're interfering with something deeply precious about all humanity. And I think that is something that every single human being ought to be aware of, if in fact all that I say makes any reasonable sense. And you'll have to judge that by reading the details, if you see what I'm trying to say. There's one other thing I might say, though, that is quite interesting, and I just, if you will pardon me, refer back to this business of the Shroud, because it's one of the most recent bits of research that I've actually done, and it's really an exciting thing. You know, the Shroud business, the connection between the Shroud and grey aliens and the harvesting of souls might seem a bizarre one, but let me tell you something. There is an extract in the Bible that describes this man, Yeshua ben Yosef, as being taken up to a high place from where he could see the cities of the world. Now, it's a very strange thing, you know, that the only place you can see the cities of the world is not from a high mountain, it is from space. And, in fact, if you go somewhat outside Judea and go straight up in the sky, you'll, at that particular time, be able to see all the cities of the world. And, in fact, I believe that Jesus Christ was taken up by this alien, if you like, entourage, whatever, and up there was told by them, "Look, we control your planet, mate. You know, blah, 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 fall down and worship us." And he was having none of that. He said to them, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for it is written that you shall not tempt the Son of Man." I think they were saying to him, "Now, listen, old fellow, you get behind me because you're even less than an insect. You are a machine. You don't know it because a machine can't have a psychology that can identify itself, but you are a machine." And since they're machines, they're not vindictive. They just said, "Oh, this is information," and they returned him back to the earth. Now, that makes sense to me. So there's a very, very, very interesting kind of, you know, side affirmation, maybe, that might be might interest your listeners to kind of research, you know.
We do want to thank Nigel Kerner and Dr. John Biggerstaff for being with us tonight. Folks, you've done a terrific job trying to describe a very lengthy subject in such a short period of time.
Thank you very much, John and Dave. It's been a privilege to share this time with you and all your listeners, and I give you my blessings.